a clarity of pure devotion, said, "What is that supreme divinity? What is the ultimate spirituality? O most excellent among men, Krishna, what is action and what is said to be the essence of manifested existence and what is called the essence of divinity? Who performs the supreme sacrifice in this body and how is it performed, slayer of too much, Krishna? How are you to be known at the time of transformation by those who have controlled themselves?" The respected Supreme Lord said, "The Supreme Divinity is the ultimate imperishable, whose intrinsic nature is said to be spirituality. The offering which generates the attitudes of existence is known as action. The existence which constantly transforms is the essence of manifested being, and the fully perfect, unchanging soul is the essence of divinity. I alone am the supreme sacrificer here in the body, O you who are best among those who have bodies. And he who is liberated from the body at the time of death, remembering me alone, he goes and attains my being without a doubt. Whatever attitude or existence one remembers when one renounces the body in the end, O son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna, that alone does he become, always thinking of that. Therefore, in all times and in all confrontations, remember me. Offering your mind and intellect to me, you will come to me without a doubt." That means if you have a doubt, you won't come to him. "United in the practice of yoga or union, with consciousness not moving to any other perception, deeply contemplating the supreme, divine, perfect consciousness, son of she who excels Arjuna, he attains. Who remembers the ancient poet, the ruler, who is smaller than an atom, supporter of all, of inconceivable form, of the color of the sun, beyond all darkness, at the time of death, with a still mind filled with devotion, and by the strength of union having the life force concentrated in the middle between the eyebrows, he completely attains the divine, supreme, perfect consciousness. Those who know wisdom call that the imperishable, as in tat tvam asi. Those who are self-controlled and free from attachment enter into it. Desiring that, they practice moving in godliness. That goal I shall briefly describe to you. Having controlled all of the doors to the body, having restrained the mind within the heart, having placed the life force in the highest summit, the soul is established in the union of contemplation. Who says, "Om, the one-syllabled supreme divinity, remembering me," as he departs, renouncing the body, he attains the supreme goal. He who always remembers me with consciousness absorbed, for him, son of she who excels Arjuna, I am easily attainable for the yogi who is always in union. Having attained to me, the great souls who have reached the highest perfection do not take birth again in the place of transitory pain. All the world's clarity of pure devotion, even the world of supreme divinity, return again. But having attained to me, O son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna, another birth is not known. Where there is no death, there is no birth. One continuous existence. The soul does not die, the energy does not die, only continuous transformation in God. Another birth is not known. just continuous transformation in God. Those people who know the day of the Supreme to be 1,000 ages, and the night of the Supreme to end in 1,000 ages, they are those who know day and night. When day comes, all manifest from the unmanifest. And when night comes, all dissolve in that which is known as the unmanifest. This village of existence manifests again and again. It's like a little village. All existence is just a little village. Helplessly, they dissolve at the coming of night and manifest at the coming of day, son of she who excels Arjuna. But superior to that unmanifest is another existence, which is the eternal unmanifest in all beings, which is not destroyed when beings perish. This unmanifest is called imperishable, said to be the highest goal. Those who attain it do not return. That is my supreme place. That supreme, full consciousness who resides in all beings, by whom this all is pervaded, is attained by totally focused devotion, son of she who excels Arjuna. I explained to you the times of departure in which yogis will return and in which they will not return, O Supreme, among descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. People who know the Supreme Divinity go to the Supreme Divinity if they depart at the time of fire, light, daytime, the bright lunar fortnight, the 6 months while the sun is in the northern hemisphere. At the time of smoke, night, the dark lunar fortnight, such yogi attains the light of the moon and returns. Light and dark are considered to be the ways of the manifested world. By one, an individual goes without return. By the other, he returns again. Any yogi not knowing these ways, son of she who excels Arjuna, is in the delusion of ignorance. Therefore, be united in union at all times, clarity of devotion, a pure devotion. Whatever meritorious fruits have been proclaimed in the Vedas, in sacrifices, in purifying austerities, and in charitable gifts, all of that is surpassed by the yogi who knows the Supreme and attains to the foremost place.
How can a yogi not know the Supreme? Isn't a yogi someone who has knowledge of the self?
No, well, there are various forms of yogis. Knowledge of the Supreme admits of degrees. Mm-hmm. You know a little bit, and then you know it fully. You know it enough to change your behavior. So here what they're saying is that some yogis still have tamas within them, and they move in the path of darkness, even though that they move into union and move out of union, they forget about the union when they come out. And so they still have tamas. And that's the path of return. So they have to manifest in order to work out all the karmas that they're accruing while they're performing these various karmas in the world of action. So light and dark are considered to be the ways of the manifested world. If we choose to dwell in the light, then we move closer and closer to that union with the Supreme. It becomes more a habit to stay in union. When we move towards darkness, and we move in darkness, then the union becomes farther away from us, and more difficult to attain to that union. So if someone comes into union once for a short time, they may think themselves to be a yogi, but that doesn't make them free from returning. to the world of action.
I'm still a bogey.
I'm still a bogey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes they hit a double bogey. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions about chapter 8? I thought as we get... Well, if you have union with any mantra, you will become one with that mantra. And if you have union with Om, you will become one with the source of all mantras.
Because you came from there.
Because, and you will return there.
Return there.
Yes.
Are they talking about the Tan mantras again?
No, the doors of the body are generally considered to be 9. This is the city of 9 gates. And they call them 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. The city of 9 gates. Those are the doors to the body. So when they're saying, when you control all the doors of the body, having restrained the mind within the heart, having placed the life force in the highest summit, the soul is established in the union of contemplation.
So the highest summit in the text refers to between the eyebrows. Is it there or is it the highest
chakra? Well, no matter, even if you bring it to the Sahasrara, you want to bring it out. Mm-hmm. So the highest summit refers to the highest summit that you can bring it to. In other words, as you bring that kundalini energy up and you focus your awareness and you get it into the heart and you get it into the Ajna chakra and then you bring it up to the Sahasrara and then you keep bringing it up through the Sahasrara out into the universe. So the highest summit is not limited by the body at all. It's not a physical destination. You'll keep bringing it up higher and higher and higher. Because your body grows, and you go outside your body. And then this highest summit has a new definition. As you bring up the energy. Are there other questions?
Yeah. In this chapter, in this verse, is he specifically referring? He's referring to a yogi who has controlled the 9 doors, who has placed a life force and something. Is this the one who sits in his asana and leaves the body at that time?
No, he does not. He may exit for a while, but it's called yoga dharanam. And that's in the Sanskrit. Dharan is, remember we have Ashtanga Yoga in the 8 paths of yoga, 8 limbs of yoga. We have Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharan. Dhyana, Samadhi. So Yoga Dharanam. He's practicing the yoga of Dharan. Contemplation. He's not the yogi of complete attainment.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about the yoga of contemplation. And then if we remember the syllable Om and go out from the body and leave the body and renounce that body, he may attain to the supreme goal.
But in chapter 12...
Or verse 12.
I mean, verse 12, but he is... he has... isn't this the yogi who has achieved the ability to go into samadhi?
He may be. We all hope he is.
Well,
but he's controlling...
Manually.
He's certainly the yogi who has controlled the doors to the body.
And he's placed the life force in the highest summit.
And he has placed the life force in the highest summit.
And so then that one who uses Om at that time can achieve the highest.
Yes. It's a wonderful meditation. Keep,
a long time.
Well, you keep pulling on the kundalini and bringing it higher. And bring the focus of your energy higher. And let it come up. And let it reside in the Ajna Chakra, and you perceive it there, and then bring it to the Sahasrara, to the summit. And then bring it higher, because it just goes way out beyond you. To the summit of existence. Well, that's the kundalini is the life force within an individual.
And what about the vital breath and the prana? Are they the same? Are they connected? Or?
Well, prana has many levels of meaning. Breath is called prana. Life force is called prana. Shakti has many levels of meaning. There's Mahashakti, which is all the energy in the universe. And there's Kundalini, which is all the energy within an individual. So we have the microcosm to the macrocosm. So the relationship between prana as life force and Kundalini as the energy within the being is very, very close. They could be considered synonymous at that point where we're really one with the life force and we're bringing the life force or the individual energy, Kundalini, bringing her up to the Ajna Chakra and Sahasrara. That will be the meditation. Now, if you call prana breath, then obviously breath is very different from kundalini. But if you call prana life force, kundalini is individual shakti. Now remember the concept of the kundalini being asleep and then suddenly waking up because of the sadhana is merely a poetic expression, because kundalini doesn't sleep. Kundalini only sleeps in a corpse. So long as there's life in that being, the kundalini is active. What is asleep is consciousness. Our awareness is asleep. We are so caught up in our little ego selves, in all our little domain of action and interaction, that we forget we are asleep to the movement of kundalini. When suddenly, through grace and sadhana, we focus our awareness upon the rise of kundalini, we suddenly say, oh, my kundalini is awake. But that's not really what happened. That's the poet's way of expressing what the experience was like. The reality is, I just became awake or aware or focused upon the movement of kundalini. So here we're bringing up that energy and letting that energy move towards the summit, and who knows where the summit lies. Bring it up as high as you can. This is not necessarily the summit, although it's a very nice place to bring it to. It's a wonderful objective. It's a fine destination in the path.
How do you bring...
You bring it up by focusing your awareness on the rise of the energy. Focusing your awareness by waking up, not necessarily the kundalini, but waking up consciousness to the rise of kundalini.
That's what that piece in the Shiva Puja does.
Yes, it does. Yes. Yeah, by bringing up step by step, locating it. That's just what Buddha Shuddhi does. Purifying the elements, the essential ingredients in each of the chakras. That's just what it's designed to do. And as we cultivate the habit of making that journey every day, then our meditation becomes more and more focused and controlled. In order to perceive the rise of Kundalini throughout the chakras, we have to close the 9 gates or the 9 doors to the city of God. And as we practice bringing up that Kundalini and paying attention to it and being aware of it, then we close the 9 doors to the village. And we focus inside, bringing that energy up higher and higher and higher until it reaches the summit of infinity, the highest summit. If you can tell me where that's located, just gets higher and higher and higher, and brighter and more profound and more. You can feel it. It's tangible energy. It's a life force that's coming through us and going out into the cosmos. And that's the meditation on the energy, on the Kundalini. That's how we use it.
Do you have a sense of it being out of control, out of your grasp, of as your ego is identifying this experience? Is there ever a point where you're letting go and it's supposed to be less and less ego as this experience is happening most likely? So I'm wondering, is there any tugging at the ego? Is there a tug of war when this is it's somewhat.
There are many, many egos that try to grab onto a small portion of the experience and use it as an appendage of self-aggrandizement rather than as an inspiration to surrender more. And that is one of the pitfalls to look out for, because the objective is not to have an experience, the objective is to know the experiencer. To realize the unity. Whenever the ego steps in and says, I'm having a Kundalini experience, and it's going out of control. Yes.
My friend was meditating next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took it off. And he whispered to his friend, I think I'm having an experience. He opened his eyes. Right? That was you, wasn't
sort
it?
Sort of.
That was a much better story. But
we have a little more time, Michael.
Yeah, there are many, many people who are still caught in spiritual materialism. And that is, they want to see signs of their progress and they want to attain something from their spiritual life. They want to be a guru, or they want to be respected, or they want to be regarded, or they want in some way to evoke the status from other people. They want a material, a demonstrative acknowledgement of their spiritual evolution. And that's where we get into these Kundalini experiences. My Kundalini is out of control. What do you mean? It was never in your control. Man, it's Kundalini. It's not in your control unless you're God. That's the only time it's in your control. And the rest of the time when you're having kriyas and dancing and shaking, these are These are not mystical experiences.
That's the ego tugging.
That's the ego tugging.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Are there other questions?
Is the experience for the yogi, when he goes into samadhi, and when he leaves his body, one and the same?
Yes. Yes, they are the same. And the reason I can say that without a doubt is there are many times that I've just gone out of my body. Now, I'm sure you can all verify that there are many times I've gone out of my mind. But beyond going out of your mind, there are many times where you just leave the body and it's the same as leaving, is moving into samadhi. You can move into samadhi and forget about the body. You just go. It's not like you go to another place. You go to another realm of consciousness where the body is not an encumbrance.
And is it a conscious choice to return to the body?
No. No. It's nature. He says it here. Everybody's going to return. Everybody's going to return.
So you return when you have karma to fulfill.
Everybody has karma to return.
Well, how quickly you return then.
That's right.
We're rushing to get back already.
Don't be late for dinner party.
Huh? How do you return?
Play ahead.
Please. So everybody's going to return. So. However, they may not take birth again in the place of transitory pain. But they will return. Just that they don't have to take birth in the place of transitory pain. Or if they do take birth in the place of transitory pain, they know how to quickly extricate themselves from transitory pain and put themselves back into the consciousness of the attitude of communion. So the transitory pain is just another thought, and they transcend that as well. That's what a yogi does. Not free from all pain, but free from attachment to the pain.
But some people come into this consciousness like right away in their birth, and some people come into it later in their life. Is that a result of their past actions in terms of doing sadhana, where they have purified them to such a point that they can right away come into that consciousness?
Yes.
Verse 9, where it talks about the ancient poet and the ruler who is smaller than an atom. What does it mean, smaller than an atom?
Because his side is inconceivable. It's not a manifested existence. This is the inconceivable form beyond all darkness. This is the supreme, perfect consciousness. So we're not even trying to going to try to give it form. Good. Yes, and he's admitting to being a poet. He's a kavi. He's a kavi, and he's an inspired poet, and he's looking for symbols. It's almost like a Zen koan, the sound of one hand clapping, the form that's smaller than an atom, the color that's brighter than the sun. That's the supreme, perfect consciousness.
Swami, when is the 6 months while the sun is in the northern hemisphere?
The 6 months when the sun is going in the northern hemisphere, and the 6 months when it's going in the southern hemisphere. I believe we call it January to July, is in the northern. Or, no, it's from the equinox from.
afternoon, Songranti.
Songranti.
Yeah, Songranti's coming.
October to March. It's in the northern hemisphere.
But they must mean the Shukla Paksha during that time, all the 6 months.
Well, he's making even further distinctions, who goes during the Shukla Paksha or the Krishna Paksha, who goes during the Uttarayan or Dakshinayan, the traversing of the sun towards, what is it, the Tropic of Cancer. It goes to the north, and then it goes back to the equator and down to the Tropic of Capricorn. Yeah, that's what he's talking about there.
So if you go between October and March, when it's in the northern hemisphere, it has to be...
He's making all the brightest the assumptions. He's taking all the brightest assumptions that are possible and saying, if these are the times when you leave, then you go to the highest good. So put yourselves in the light all the time. Surround yourselves by light. Every time darkness comes to you, light a light. Illuminate yourselves. Don't stay in the dark. Because if you go and remain in darkness, there's a good chance you got to come back and do it again and again and again. So free yourselves from the darkness by illuminating the light.
So this isn't to be taken at all literally, this living body during this time.
Well, it can be, we're talking more about spiritually. Just whenever you you meditate to leave your body in the greatest light, in illumination. Whenever you contemplate your spiritual life, put yourselves in the highest light. Renounce confusion. Don't let it come near you. I believe that this is the message that they're giving to us again and again. Don't allow that conflict and confusion to enter into your lives. It's like the mustard seed. You have a bag of mustard seeds. Suddenly there's a little hole, and all these mustard seeds keep falling out. Now, you get a new cloth, and you pick up each mustard seed one by one and put it back into the cloth. And then you tie it together at the top and suddenly find another little hole on this side. So you pick up each mustard seed. And that's the story of the mustard seeds, because they're very, very tiny and hard to pick up. And it's the same thing with our thoughts. You let doubt get in there, and it just takes over. You got to pick up every one of them, one by one, and put them back and reason with them. So he's saying here in this text, don't give doubt a place. Don't allow darkness to enter into your life. Whenever you feel that you may be approaching the presence of darkness, illuminate your light and don't give it an opportunity. Put yourself in the bright fortnight. Put yourself in the bright light. Put yourself in the path of the sun. Put yourself with the yogis. Put yourself near the fire. Put yourself in the illumination. Do not give darkness a place to live in your lives. Because once you do, it takes you so much trouble to pick up every one of those mustard seeds and put it back into the cloth.
Very true.
Namaste. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Yourself to satsang. It's really a remarkable collection, a compilation, a great inspiration. Namaste. Mustard seeds. Did you ever spill the mustard seeds?
Oh, Lord.
You know what it takes to pick up every one of them, put it back.
I didn't pick up.
Parv didn't pick him up, huh?
Jay Parv.
I didn't tell Parv too either. We have a vacuum.
Well, you know, the sadhus didn't walk around with vacuum cleaners. And when we spilled our mustard seeds, boy, we had to pick them up ourselves. I mean, that was the rules of the game. And whenever anybody spilled all their mustard seeds, it was their duty to pick them up themselves.
That's why we have to be with the mother, so she has the vacuum cleaners.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. All right, break's over.